Blog Talk Radio.
UGS Radio is not intended for anyone under the age of 18 years old. We reserve the right to say whatever the fuck we want to say because we believe in free speech. And if you do not believe in free speech...
Get the fuck out of here, you stupid cocksucker!
For Rap Music's biggest online archive of legends and pioneer interviews as well as underground music from around the globe, visit us now at UGSforLife.com.
Yeah! President Beta! Murder Master Music Show! Welcome to the Murder Master Music Show. This right here is where the real rap at. A fuck pilot. We doing what we love just to hear it play back. This is where the real is at.
The Young Castro from the Outlaw.
It's your boy Al Capone.
What's that? And it's Bootleg the Rock Capone from the Dayton family.
Baby, it's your boy Al Capone.
What up, y'all? This is E-Shop.
Yo, 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 what's up? This your boy C-Murder, and I'm chilling with my boy Scott Beta, and you're listening to the Murder Master Music Show. It's the hottest thing out right now, you heard me? Keep it true.
What's up, episode 114? We got the homie SMK coming through, Memphis legend. For those of you who don't know who he is, I'll put you this way. Man, he's done stuff for E-40, Tupac, not to mention all the legends in Memphis, of course, like Al Capone. And, you know, and dude's been around for many years. He even did a project I kind of had a little hand in with Brother Marquise of the 2 Live Crew called Bottom Boy Style. That came out about 5-6 years ago. It's crazy to have all these Memphis cats on here. We got probably one of the biggest online archives of Memphis legendary interviews. So, we're gonna keep this shit coming every week. There's Mac. Gonna bring Mac on. Mac, I was just explaining to everybody about SMK. You set this one up, man. What made you want to have SMK on here?
Well, I figured since can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah, I figured since, you know, we done had, you know, this show paid a lot of homage to the legends and the pioneers. Plus, we done had down everybody from Memphis on here. There's still a couple of them that we ain't been able to talk to, and SMK was one of them. So I was like, shit, let me look around and see if I could find them. My homeboy Cosmo told me we could find them, and, so he just told me to look for him on Facebook. I sent him a friend request. He accepted it, and I hit him on the inbox, and you know what I'm saying? He hit me right back, so another one of those real ones like that.
Yeah, you've gotten a lot of cats like that for the show out of Memphis. I think Crunchy Black. You got Servant
yep.
like that. You know, Marvelous.
Yeah, Frazier Boy. And Frazier Boy, too. He did the same way. I just hit him on Facebook, tried to... You know, I always give them the website information first, because I pump the website no matter what. Like, I tell them if they're too busy to come on the show or they're not interested, still enjoy the archives. You know what I'm saying? So I think sometimes a lot of them, they might have other things to do. And like Kid Creole, man, for instance, he hit me right back and was like, he's just so busy he couldn't commit to nothing. And I'm like, dang, this dude, he's from, you know, like the beginning era of the hip-hop, and I wanted to get him on the show so Reddy Red could ask him questions, because Reddy Red a big fan of them, you know what I'm saying? So it was like, some of them hit back, man. And I hope you get shout out to the ones that do that.
Yeah, that's how I found a lot of people, too, was online. A lot of people thought that I used my connects as a journalist. With a few of them, yeah, but for the most part, I found all these dudes online, man, just like you did. It's crazy. Did you ever think, though, as a fan growing up, buying this shit, listening to this music, do you ever think that you'd be able to just, like, you know, talk with these motherfuckers on a regular basis and have them on shows?
Well, some of them in Memphis I used to see all the time, but not necessarily talk music with them. It's always, like, when you see a lot of rap dudes in the street sometimes, it's always, you hear guys, it's always, you know, keep it real and, you know, all that type of shit, but I never thought I'd be talking to, like, Spice One or some shit, like, especially, like, you know, cats like Spice One, because those are some of my heroes in this shit, you know what I'm saying? And to be able to ask him questions that I always wondered about. Like, we had Big Psych on last week, like, to ask him about shit he was doing with Pac, because we was wondering about that type of shit when they was doing it, you know what I'm saying? I think that shit cool as fuck. That's the best part of the show, man, for real, to me.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good to have it all archived. And everybody go hit up that YouTube page, man. Hit up the fucking the website, UGSForLife.com, as always. Hit up the Reverb Nation page. You know, play all those videos. You know, share them, man. We need you to share that shit. Like them. And I want to touch on some other shit, man. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of phony motherfuckers out there. They're not about what they say they're going to do. You know, we've had a lot of people lately, you know, whether it was guests or people that were supposed to send music, people who were supposed to be on the show, people who were supposed to pay for some shit. I mean, just straight lying. Straight making up excuses. Not even, you know, not even putting any effort into coming up with the real excuse. You know what I'm saying? Let alone even contacting a motherfucker in return. This show is something that we do, you know what I'm saying, for the fans, for the fellow fans like us. But we still got to get paid at the end of the day. You know what I'm saying? We can't be doing this shit for free for the rest of our fucking lives. You know what I'm saying? To amuse people that don't want to support. You know, shout out to the ones that listen and tune in and share the links. Because without you guys, we wouldn't have a chance. But, because even when we invade these social media sites, these big rap websites, man, the young motherfucking swaggots, they don't know nothing about no fucking Penthouse Players Click or, you know, they can give
you
a
know,
fuck
like
less.
Yeah, like to be able, like to hear them guys, man. Like,
I seen comments where they call these dudes like grandpa and shit or old ass motherfuckers need to get out. You know, it's like they have no respect at all. You know, so we need the support from the ones that do oppose these swaggots, you know. But you was breaking up, Mac. Could you see if you got something wrong with your phone?
Hold on, let me check it again. You know how I be out here in St. Louis. Can you hear me good now?
Yeah, yeah, that's a little bit better. Yeah. That's a little bit better. Yeah, man, it's just people, you know, they need to quit front with the bullshit and, you know. I was always taught, man, you do what you say. You know what I'm saying? If you tell somebody you're going to do something, you follow through with it. You know, that's it's just honor and respect. You know, but
your word supposed to be everything. But nowadays, man, most people word ain't shit. You know what I'm saying? Like you can't even count on a motherfucker to be behind what they say they behind. A lot of times.
And to be honest too, it's a lot of these dudes. Maybe they're just on the go so much. You know, they're connected to 10 social media sites at once. They're at work. They got people texting them. Maybe they just say whatever. Maybe they don't even know what the fuck they're saying too. You know, maybe they're just so mind-fucked by electronics and it's taken over their lives. I've seen that happen to people. It's called a fucking mental breakdown, you know what I'm saying, over materialistic bullshit. Why are you wired to a fucking machine 24/7? And some of these dudes, you know what I'm saying, shout out to Zip, man, because that dude's a hustler. You know, some of these dudes, you know, and he'll tell you, they got like fucking 20 or 30 of these fucking sites that they go to on a regular basis. You know what I'm saying? And they're connected to that shit. Who the fuck can do all that? It's like multitasking on top of fucking multitasking. You know what I'm saying? Fuck all that shit. I miss the simpler times. You know, I like networking, though, man. I like being able to talk to these dudes, you know what I'm saying, these legends and pioneers, like how you do and how I do. But I don't know, man. All the other technical shit, man, for the birds, can't stand it.
Yeah.
Well, we're waiting on our guest, man. I'm going to play one of his songs. This is called Make 'Em Walk. This is SMK. This dude's a legendary artist and producer out of Memphis.
Yeah.
Check out this shit right here. We'll be back here in a little bit on the Murder Mass Music Show.
GGS for life, bitch.
There I go again. this and that. That away when shawty dropping low. Bounce back up and go like this, cause this how we be so. 40 G's a show trip. When you say my name, it ain't just about rapping pimp. I just be like, watch me do it, then you know that I ain't him. Steal my style, steal my beat, steal my dance. Get me back, go. Boys, got you with them raps, with them raps. I make them burn. You can turn your radios up. Guarantee I get them up. Now pimpin' what? Pimpin' what? I make them walk. You can play my song, watch them wild out. We live that kind of life these rappers rap about. I make them walk. All across the floor to be that gangsta walk. And when that gangsta walk, I'm showing off. Showing off, I make them walk.
With the hype. That's how they welcome me back. Mine. So they know I'm back in this bitch to do some hammer time. Bang, got some beats on these niggas and show them Donkey Kong. Uncle Sean, drum on these niggas and tell them bring it on. Listen, Jones, you can go and tell them that I heard the song. Niggas, they be hurting for beats, that's why the fuck you on. SMK, slap on the drums and get the rhythm going. Street music, them be the DJs that keep the party flowing. Tennessee, straight from the home of the first 48. Gangsta walk. How we buckin' and jukin' here, okay? Time's out, Pippin' see Roadie, we got our own thing. Scarface, son on these niggas, rappin' this cocaine. They say good things only come to those who wait. I feel I waited long enough, God get me straight. Cause we gon' do more than get money, set trends. Uncle Sean hit you with beats, okay, I'm back again. Bottles up, hands full of money, you can tell them I'ma do it again.
Somebody tried calling. I think we got a guest on the line. Somebody tried calling, though. I had to take the other line, and some telemarketer or some motherfucker, I tried to call it back real quick. It says you cannot connect to this phone because it's a magic jack line or some shit. I was like, what the fuck? The fuck out of here. Man, they always offer that shit on TV. If I can't call it, then what? If people can't call you, why the fuck do you want it then? All right, let's bring on SMK. Is that you?
Okay. Yo.
Man, first and foremost, I want to welcome you to Murder Master Music Show, man. This is legendary artist, producer from Memphis, SMK, man. How you doing, man?
What's up, fella?
Hey, it's good to have you on the show.
What's
man.
What's
up,
bro?
Mac J, co-host.
All right, Mac Jizzle. All right.
What's good with it, baby?
What's up with you, bro? I'm holding it down.
Yeah, man, me and Perez was talking earlier, and he asked me what made me reach out to you to get you on the show, and I was telling him earlier.
Hey,
man,
this show paid. Not to cut you off. Hey, man, you on the earpiece?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm distorted. You're a little bit better than now.
All right, my bad, man. But like I was telling them was, you know, we pay homage to all the legends and pioneers, and I guarantee we got the largest online archive, period. But when it comes to Memphis and Memphis artists and producers, I guarantee we got the biggest, and it's still a few guys that we haven't got on the show yet, and I felt you was one of them. So
yeah.
I started looking for you, and shout out to my homie Cosmo for sending me the right direction to find you and shit.
Yeah, that's what's up. Cosmo, my little partner there.
I want to ask you this, you know what I'm saying, just to give people an idea, you know, Memphis rap is deep roots, you know what I'm saying, history is un-fucking believable. How far back do you go in that history, SMK, and what part did you play in creating that history?
Okay, I come in the game in Memphis in 1990, and Jazzy Faye, him and his dad. His dad is the original Barcades, the original group that was out back in the days. His dad is the bass player for the Barcades. And so they came down to West Palm Beach, Florida, and they came to a little showcase that I was in, and they liked what I was doing, and they brought me and this guy named Kid Money to Memphis for the record at the House of Blues. And that's when I got my first whiff. I had went down on Bill Street to a club called 380. And Squeaky was DJing. And when I went in the club, it was like 18 and under. And they was in there like just bouncing. It was like 800 packed deep. And they was just bouncing and they was doing the gangster walk. And I asked Squeaky, I was like, what's that dance right there? And he was like, that's the gangster walk. And they ain't had, I said, play the song so I can see them do it. He said, it ain't no gangster walk song. He said, when you just play certain music, they do it. Watch when I play Trigger Man. And he threw on Trigger Man and it was a rap. They got real wild. And then so I went in the studio with Jazzy Faye and Kid Money that next night. I said, I'm not doing hip hop. No commercial hip hop. I'm doing straight underground. You know what I'm saying? Memphis, this gangster walk. Mm-hmm. I did the gangster walk song. And I took it and Squeaky played it and they went crazy. And that was it. Right there. That's how I came into the game. Messing with Memphis.
Yeah, I remember the video for that too. Y'all had the, that was at Club 380 Bill too, wasn't it? That video?
Exactly. Yep. The video was shot at 380 Bill.
Yeah, I remember y'all had the pull over starter jackets on and shit.
Yeah, yeah, we was back there. Yep, big Gucci chain. Yeah, we was all in there like that.
And so that's pretty much how you first got started off in it, was going to Club 380 Bill and fuck with Squeaky them, huh?
Right, messing with Squeaky. And then I had seen, then they was on stage rapping. And the music that they was doing was like, shoot them down, buck them up, hit them like da, 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 da. And I was like, yo, this shit hot. And I just caught on to it because I was just a producer. But I was a writer for Kid Money, for the artists that came with me from West Palm Beach. So what it was is that I've been a freestyle. So I was like, let me just try to grab the mic and just, you know, do it my way. And that's how I came with that gangster walk. And that song hit number one on the radio for like 2 years, most requested. When it came out, and it was just on cassette, you know, so it came a long way.
Yeah, and I always heard, like, you know, because MC Hammer had that Get Buck, and he stole a lot of that stuff from what y'all was already doing. A lot of cats really don't know that, and they thought that, you know, he was a dancer and he was coming up with stuff, but he was taking stuff from y'all was doing, you
right.
know what I'm saying? So I want motherfuckers to know that shit too, you know what I'm saying?
Right, and this how that came about. A lot of people don't know, but it's this artist named Get Down. He was from Nashville, and he used to dance with Jazzy Faye. And Jazzy Faye and Get Down used to wear these high tops with the pole. They used to dress just like how Hammond did. But when Hammond came to Memphis and did it, Jazzy Faye and Get Down was dancing, doing the same dance Hammer was doing, but you know Memphis gone gangsta walking, Get Buck. So when Jazzy Faye and them started gangsta walking, Hammer was amazed at Get Down, because Get Down was killing it. And so Hammer took them on the road when he left Memphis. He took them with him, and that's how Get Down got to telling them how if he did gangsta walk, it'd be big. So they try to change it from gangsta walk to Get Buck. And that's where, you know what I'm saying, they came with all of that with lead, because really Get Down to dance like Hammer, it was vice versa. So, you know what I'm saying, if Get Down, but Get Down could gangster walk, he could gangster walk his ass off, you know what I'm saying, like Crunchy Black now. So that was it. Hammer was just shocked at that, and he took him on the road with him, and they just, you know, tried to give it to Hammer and told him that he could be even bigger with this, but you can't be, because this Memphis, and then they didn't want to really, you know what I'm saying, just like put Memphis on the map with the gangster walk like that. They just wanted to be dancers, like universal type dancers. But gangster walk ain't no universal type dance. It's Memphis, you know what I'm saying? The sound of the music. That's what the gangster walk was about.
What about at what point, you know, when Gangster Pac got in the game? And he got to deal first with Joey Boy, then with Atlantic. I mean, what did that do for the city? You were there at the time. You saw it all transpire. How did that change the Memphis
rap? On the real, when I first got there, matter of fact, Pat was one of the ones I heard when I first heard in the club when Squeaky was playing. And I heard that, I'm the gangster. And it blew my mind. I was like, whoa. So I had took the good tie hit in the song. At the end, he go, burn. And he played it. And I heard that he played all the instruments and everything. And he produced that record. So I took that hit and I put it in Gangsta Walk. And it came on. And I had, we was on the show. And he asked, I thought we was finna have some beef. And he was like, yo, who did that track? And I was like, damn, should I tell this nigga? Because this nigga talking like he ready to fight. And then I told him I did. And he was like, I like that track. I was like, oh, my nigga. And that's, me and Pat was cool from that point right there. But I always love Pat. You know what I'm saying? I caught a couple of his shows, but he just had it hard. He was the first artist to deal in Memphis. And then I was second. I had came out on EMI. Well, I ain't never come out, but EMI had signed me in 91.
And, man, what was it like to be the second kid from the city of Memphis to get a major deal that had been, at that time, fucking amazing?
Right. Yeah, it was because, but one part that kind of like caught me off guard because it was business and I kind of was like tied up into the hype of the music and being an artist, you know. So that kind of like was the move, but you know what I'm saying? I was trying to watch and see how does a major deal work. And so it kind of like was working against me. It was working for me, but it was working against me at the same time because I never was no independent label then. I didn't like to be up under no orders of no other label who didn't know really what they was doing. And Jazzy Faye Dad was the label. And so it kind of got complicated. And I didn't, so I had to wind up buying myself out of the EMI situation. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, after a couple of years, that was with Clyde Davis and Fred Davis. You know, I got out of that situation. And then from there, I just went independent with Selecto Hit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you did some stuff. You worked with just about everybody in Memphis. Who are some of the guys that stand out? And what were the projects?
Oh, man. It was the main project that really, like, blew my mind. Couple of songs I did was on Al Capone, and that was Lyrical Drive-By, and then that's when Skinny Pimp and 211 came into the picture, and then I did some songs with them. Matter of fact, I did a whole project with them, and now that, to come back to that point right there, that's when Eazy-E, Al Capone had hit, like, number one in the Jet Magazine Billboard back part of the magazine. And Eazy-E gave us a call and asked us to send some material to him. And we sending out that to him. And then next thing you know, we hear Bone. And they was, you know what I'm saying, sounding like Memphis. And it was like Paul, you know, they was really trying to come with, like, how Paul and them was. Because Paul and them had the underground on lock. Him and Squeaky. You know what I'm saying? So I'm talking about this go back way then. And Paul and them, they was in high school. That's when I met him. You know what I'm saying? And he was, you know, doing his thing then.
Did Paul and them, did they drive around with a Chucky doll?
Paul rode around with the Chucky doll. He had a green cut dog, and he had a Chucky doll hanging out of the trunk, or he'd have him in hanging out of the window. That's my dude right there.
Yeah. I heard that story before. I heard them dudes were real big into that.
And he had that shit airbrushed on the trunk and shit, too.
Yeah, he had the airbrush. Oh, he kept it right. And then, see, we were selling cassettes out of the car stereo shops. So Paul be making his rounds to all the car stereo, you know, spots like that. And I was putting beat CDs, instrumentals in there. You know what I'm saying? They was putting music out. So a lot of them would come and they'd get the beat CDs, and then they'd call me and be like, SMK, can I rap on, you know, some of these beats that's on this cassette? Because they'll take it right off of the cassette and slap it right onto the 4-track, and you finna hear it the next day in a club or somewhere, Squeaky or Paul or Juicy J DJ. You know?
This shit just spread. Yeah, the Memphis sound, though, the Memphis sound has spread to a lot of different places. I think Atlanta being one of the biggest places it's spread to. What's your whole take on the whole Atlanta, you know what I'm saying, a lot of people say they stole the soul from Memphis, man. What's your take on that?
Well, I think what they doing is what everybody doing right now is, like, when I was in Atlanta, because when I got the deal in 91, they was flying me to Atlanta then, trying to separate me from my little clique, and I didn't know that. So when I was going to Atlanta to mix my album and do picture shoots and all of that kind of shit, I wind up going to a few clubs in Atlanta. And when I got in the clubs, I was hearing a lot of Memphis. So when I started doing in-stores, you know, we was doing autographs and everything back then. So I'm trying to go everywhere. So now I'm all through Atlanta. I'm in Decatur. So I go in this one store in Decatur, and dude got a whole wall. It's all Memphis cassettes. And I'm like, yo, you know, how you get this connect? And then that's when Pat was down there. He was promoting Memphis real hard. So that was a big plus. And it was like mainly the college that was into it real heavy, because, you know, Memphis, you know, when they leave and go anywhere, they taking Memphis with them. So they was basically like, you know, sharing Memphis music with Atlanta. So eventually, like, everywhere you go, the flea markets, Memphis, all the mom and pop record stores, Memphis. The cars riding through the mall every weekend, they playing number Memphis. Now, I was producing this little group while I was in the studio. I think this was like 94 or 95. And the group was like, yo, SMK, can we rap for you? I was like, yeah, go ahead. And they started rapping, and they reminded me, I'm telling you, it was like three of them, a girl and two dudes. And they was like, they reminded me of 666, but on some real, like, we can fucking rap. And they took the same Memphis style, but they were saying, riding through Decatur. And I was like, nah, y'all can't do that. That's what I was saying in my head.
Yeah.
And that was when I seen the birth of that shit coming out, because when nobody doing it, all the local kids that was in school, they started imitating 3-6 Mafia and all the Memphis rap. Anything Squeaky put out or Paul them put out, they started imitating it, but putting they streets and they hood and they stuff in it. And they needed that sound in order for to make it all be legit. And that's how it came about. You know what I'm saying? Because I did a lot of work with a lot of artists in Atlanta. And I was trying to help, you know,
DJ
really.
Toomp, yeah. All kinds of cats.
And see, that now if you talk to Toomp will tell you, oh, SMK is the reason why I'm doing this. That's how T.I. got that beat from him. And so when he did that, I called Toomp and we talked. And Toomp said, I know you here, SMK. I was like, yeah, I hear. And because, you know, I met Toomp down in Miami. He was doing the booty shakers. And I had Kid Money out. See, Kid Money was hot down in West Palm Beach, Florida.
Him and
you know
Marquise
what I'm saying?
Had a group together too.
Exactly, Marquise. This was Two Live Crew and Two Live Crew and JT Money and his boy. They was together. You know what I'm saying? It was a lot of Florida had it on lock. And a whole, you know what I'm saying? But that's all that I could see because I was young. So I was like, you know what I'm saying? I started leaving and going like to Texas, down to New Orleans, down to, you know, Alabama, but one stuff popping in a lot of them cities like that. But when I got to Houston, I seen Rap-A-Lot forming. I seen that, you know what I'm saying, UGK. I went to go see them dudes, you know what I'm saying? While Memphis was playing it, I went to go see them. So it was like, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, I had met Pimp C, and he just was like a different kind of dude, but he always kept it real. Before you ever do some music with Pimp and wind up talking with them for hours and before you even do anything. And you know what I'm saying? And then you'll realize, like, shit is bigger than music. Just like how y'all kept it going and y'all, you know, y'all kept an eye on Memphis underground hip-hop. And throughout the whole course, you know what I'm saying? It's like, right now, I'm looking at, like, this the year right here where Memphis will be recognized for our role play in the music industry. This going to be the year right here.
Real talk, man. Let's talk about the song in the background, though. You know what I'm saying? No More Pain, legendary Tupac. You produced that, didn't you?
What? Yeah, this how that went down. Like when Devontae, you know the group Jodeci.
Yeah.
Jodeci
yeah.
had got signed to Uptown, and that's Puffy. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you remember the guy Father MC.
I remember.
He had the song
MC.
Treat them how they want to be treated.
Yeah.
Treat, yeah. And that was Jodeci singing in the background on that. Puffy put that record together. You know what I'm saying? So Jodeci had came to Rochester for to do some recording. He had got a studio and he was looking for talent. And Rochester, New York is 5 hours away from New York City. So this one I was signed to EMI. And you remember the group Black Sheep?
Yeah,
I remember Black Sheep.
Dress and them, yeah.
Okay, and see, they were signed to EMI Records. And remember, Hand on the Shotgun, Cypress Hill?
Yeah.
They were signed to EMI. Remember Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby?
Unfortunately. I know what you're saying. There's a lot of platinum shit that was signed at the EMI.
Yeah, so that's when I was signed, and they didn't understand South rap, and so I had to come to New York. So Dave Gossett begged me to come. I said, "All right, you know what? I'm finna go to Rochester, and I'll meet you, because I ain't know how far New York City was from Rochester, because I was always in the South, because we moved from Gary, Indiana, to Rochester." So that's when, you know, I only was in Rochester for like three and a half years. I dropped out of school in my senior year, 17. And that's when I left and went down to West Palm Beach, Florida. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, so from there, that's how I had, I came back to Rochester for the visit. And I was supposed to be going to New York City for the meet with EMI Records for to play my album. So Dave Gossett came up to Rochester. And when he came to, he said, "Man, it took us 5 hours to get to you, but we here, you know what I'm saying? We ready to take you back when you ready." So I told him I'm ready now. So as we was leaving out, there was a whole crowd outside of my mom's house, and they was like, you know, "SMK, SMK, we want to take pictures." And then they were saying, "Jodeci and them downtown, they looking for talent." So my mama said, "Go down there and blow their mind, baby." And I went down there, and I auditioned. You know what I'm saying? I seen a lot of my people that I went to school with and other people that was, you know, breakdancing into the hip-hop. So when they seen me, they showed me a lot of love. And Devontae came upstairs, and he kicked everybody out. He said, "Everybody who's here, y'all could come tomorrow." And then he said, "SMK, come on down here." And he welcomed me into the basement. And then, you know, we went to playing some beats and stuff. And when he played the, he was playing some of they Jodeci, you know, stuff in the come out on their album. So Missy was there, Timlin, Magoo, Genuine, Tweet from Rochester, though. So everybody, the whole basement family down there, Player and them, they from Louisville, Kentucky. So as I'm sitting there, you know what I'm saying, I played some of my album from EMI that I was finna drop with them. And it was the Ain't None Shaking album, the one that I got the two blunts hanging from my mouth. See, that was my real first major breakthrough album. And it never did got released through them. So that's why I had to keep changing the dates. And I had my own masters. So when I was playing the beats, playing the stuff for Devontae, they was like, you know, "Oh, we could sing on top of these kind of beats." So he put me in charge as a producer. He was constantly leaving the studio, going in and out of town. But, you know, to make a long story short, I had left Rochester at the audition for him, and I had went to New York to my meeting. And had a whole deal with EMI, and they was talking about they don't understand the music, the bass and all of that, why the bass so loud, who could dance to the music, it's too slow, this and that, why I'm talking about black and white people, all of this crazy stuff, and about killing and welfare and drugs. I was like, "Ah, man," cussing. I said, I don't even want to talk to y'all. So when I got back with Devontae and them, I just laid down some beats. And he played the piano on top. It was a piano already going through that joint. And then he played the piano on top of it. And he played, and he tried to play a good tie lick in that joint. And that he was in the back doing a wah-wah, and he couldn't come up with the other licks. So that's how the song just came about. And then he took the track out to L.A. And I guess when he was playing it, you know what I'm saying, Tupac them heard it. And next thing you know, one day I'm like, "Yo, this dude rapping on this track, man, and y'all ain't moving as a company." And then too late, then I had already produced a lot of music up under them. And then that's how Timbaland came out with the style, and everybody thought Timbaland came out with that style. But he was recycling some of the beats that I already had laid. And, you know, so He ain't nothing but a copycat. So, his whole style is
right. Big. So did you ever get a credit for that? On the Tupac song?
Nope. Because I was still learning the business. I was up under Devontae, under the basement camp. Like if you Google that, go on the internet, you will read an article and it'll tell you how Timbaland sat outside the door and SMK was inside the studio banging the beats. That's what the engineer dude, whoever it was, they wrote an article about the ghost that nobody knew about, how Devontae and them got their style, their sound. And the engineer dude knew me because I was in charge. When Devontae gone out of town, I'm in charge. Timbaland, Genuine, everybody up under me. But I wasn't really messing with them like that. I let them do them, and I let them call on me in the studio if they need my help. But they always wanted to see what I was going to do. So that's how I kept on getting a whiff of that sound. And this was the only one that was really like, she'll write to a raw beat. It could just be the kick and the snare and the hi-hat. And she going to sit there and write some shit to that. So that's how they, if you listen to them, they rapping just like how Endo and Blunt was rapping.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you about Endo and Blunt, because they shit was raw as a motherfucker, too. I feel they don't get enough credit either, being early pioneers from the Memphis.
Yeah, they was signed to Luke Records. It was down with Luke.
What it is is that they was two different individuals, and they was more friends before they was looked at as a rap group together. So that, you know what I'm saying, it's like, you know, friends fall out or friends do different things at certain times. So they never kept it about the music. And Endo didn't know really how much of a star that he was and how much people really liked his talent. And sometimes Endo switched his style up. And that's why I wasn't mad that people were taking his style and using it because they was getting paid for it when he should have been getting paid for it. Because I'm going to tell you on the real, if you play Endo Nym intro to their album, the one that came out on loop, and then you play Up Jumps the Boogie, that album, you will see the styles. I mean, they scraped, raped it, like, and didn't care. You know, Timbaland and them did, and they did it commercial, though, but I'm like, yo, you know, at least say where y'all got it from. Then, you know, people go to say, oh, my mama stayed down there in Memphis, because he would start telling them that sound like that.
Yeah.
You know? And that's when he came out with that sound. You remember when he said Up Jumps the Boogie, when he said Dirty South, Can Y'all Really Feel Me? Because I some of my people had started telling him, like, yo, nigga, SMK, you can't get the South. The South don't want to hear that like that. And see, by him being on pop music, it made it look like the South was accepting that shit. So really, the college was, because it was hip hop. You know what I'm saying? That's what hip hop was. It was a college scene to me more so.
Yeah.
And it was B-boy was the birth of hip hop, and that was just the culture of the dressing. And I was glad that I got a whiff to be a part of hip hop in the birth, almost in the making. You know what I'm saying? When we moved from Gary to Rochester, it's like Rochester was more of a fan of hip hop, so I got the see the, you know what I'm saying? Like, I dressed it like Run DMC them, but I try to dress better. Like, you know what I'm saying? They had a pair of Lees on. I try to go get me some Lees that was two-tone. I took up sewing class in high school, and niggas used to be laughing. Oh, nigga, you in sewing with all them bitches. I'm like, yeah, nigga, I'm in here with the girls. And plus, nigga, you want to pay me for to take the pockets off of them black jeans and put them pockets on them maroon jeans.
Right.
Yeah, I was laughing.
That's old school, man.
Yeah, but I got paid off of them. So I, you know, like the shell toe Adidas, I take some white on white shell toes, and then I go get some brown shoe polish, and I hit that white and turn that white into brown leather, and then I go to school with no shoelaces in them, with some brown leather white shell toe Adidas. They don't even make these. You know what I'm saying? I learned that from the Puerto Ricans. And I was a real B-boy. My B-boy days, you know, that's what led me into the music then. You know, the break dancing, and then I come out break dancing on my own beat. I ain't come out to no Planet Rock or none of that shit. I sampled Planet Rock and mixed up some shit because I was a DJ. And that's what a lot of people don't know. I started out in this game as a motherfucking DJ.
You did a lot of stuff with Brother Marquise in the early days too, didn't you?
Yeah, what it was, when Keith was with Two Live Crew, we really couldn't do too much. because they was on, you know, more politics, and they were superstars, basically, on that note. And I wasn't into that, you know what I'm saying? Because I had more money than them and didn't understand that part of the rap game. Because I used to run across rappers that I was looked up to on TV, on Rap City. But when I go around them, I'm like, yo, these dudes ain't got no money. I don't want to be in that music and not make no money. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I learned the game watching Marquise and them, remember, because they was getting sued and then they was saying that they was broke and all of that. So, you know, I kind of learned from that. And me and Marquise hooked up in Memphis, and we did a project together. And it came out through Selecto. And it wasn't about making numbers. He just wanted to do some recording and do something different. We wasn't trying to prove to nobody that he was going to, you know, be number one. He just wanted to do something, be in Memphis, just the whole vibe. And he did that, you know, with King JC. Shout out to King JC. All my men, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, no doubt.
yeah. Definitely. I got the review in the Murder Dog, you know what I'm saying, and it was a solid piece, man, definitely. Have you talked to Mark since then? Or?
Yeah, I talked to him, like, about some months ago. I had I was up in Rochester visiting, and I ran it. Matter of fact, I ran into a little rapper, and he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I know Brother Marquise. And, you know, I was like, man, call Marquise right now. And he didn't know Marquise knew me, you know. Then he didn't know a lot of people knew me. He was naming some managers and different people that do business. I was like, I know them too. Call them. You know what I'm saying? Who I don't know. But, you know, that's what I love about this game. I met a lot of people, you know what I'm saying? Like, even Pat, I be in places and I see Gangsta Pat chilling. He got him a crib here. He be here, he be there. And I was like, that's how you got to do it. You know what I'm saying? Get out and about it and let people know, you know what I'm saying, what you can do.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And you're going city to city. You've been in a lot of places. You know what I'm saying? What do you think of the rap game now? Me and Mac, we always talk about how man, shit's kind of gone fucking, I don't know. JT Money says it best. There's a lot of ADD music, some dumbed down shit going around right now. What's your take on the game right now?
I think what it is that nobody, when you don't know who your daddy is, then you don't, you know what I'm saying? You just run around like a bastard, and that's basically what a lot of people doing. They being real selfish with the game, and there ain't no more, you know, everybody individuals. So that's why I came back into the game right now, you know what I'm saying, 2014, for to put that perspective in place. And right now I'm sitting on, like, probably 2,500 beats. That's what I've been doing for the past, after me and Troy and Jeezy came. When Jeezy came out, that's when I had to sit back, because that's when the game, I seen that the game ain't about no good music. It's about marketing in different markets.
Right.
Who be the first to do this and who say this? And how you said it, and where you said it, and when you said it. And I happened to be in a lot of places when them who, what, when, where's was going down. Just like Killer Mike. His name was Skunk. I met him when I had the EMI deal. And he was in Atlanta. And the studio that I was recording in, was his people. So he was coming to the studio when I come in town every weekend. And he was like, yo, you know, I don't like rapping on that South shit, but I'll rap on your shit. And now look at Killer Mike. He that dude. You see what I'm saying? I was in around people at their careers, like, influencing them, you know, and watching them. Because I told him, I said, bro, you need to rap on these South beats. He's like, yeah, I would. He said, but then I'll be dumbing down. And he said, he'll kill any artist on the South beat coming out of Atlanta. But he didn't want to do that. But now look at what he doing. You see what I'm saying? He doing exactly what I told him he should have did then. And he, you know, and then he changed his name to Killer Mike, and it wasn't Skunk no more.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
what do you think? What do you,
you know,
think
so
about
I,
the whole thing? Not to cut you off, SMK, but what do you think about the whole motherfuckers wearing dresses, tights, walking around with purses?
Let me tell you something. On the real, I ain't amazed. Really, I don't fuck with the rap game the way that, you know what I'm saying, that I guess it's the music, you know, look at all of this hype going on, because a lot of motherfuckers, just because they're a man and they don't like women. They like women and they like men. And then, on, you know what I'm saying? So in Atlanta, I got to witness a club, you know, coming. My partner had a studio, and I went outside to go, you know, I couldn't smoke in the studio. So I said, man, let me go out here and hit my blunt. So I go out there to hit my blunt, and I go out to the parking lot, and the parking lot is packed with a bunch of dudes. And I see dudes holding dudes' hand, dudes' biggest head.
Fucking Blue Oyster, man. Where was
this
at?
Yeah, so that shit there, this was at Atlanta on, I forget this, Mitchell Street. And the club was right there, the next street over from Peachtree, the heart of downtown Peachtree, right there by the police station on Spring Street. This club was so... That shit was off the chain, man. It was crazy. And when I went out, I'm smoking my blunt, and I'm seeing this shit. So I'm telling niggas, like, yo, man, y'all need to get back from by my car. You know what I'm saying? I had the Chevy that was sitting on the D's. It was super clean, super white pearl. You know, these niggas, I'm like, yo, y'all got to move. So I don't know. Y'all should be familiar with 1129. So 11 came out and was, like, talking shit. He was like, man, look at all this gay shit, this fuck shit. Nigga, we don't get down like this in Memphis. What the fuck going on? So my partner Bill that owned the studio, he was like, SMK, don't say nothing to them. You know, they go to the club around the corner. They park right here. I'm like, yo, this shit ain't right. So after seeing that shit there, and a lot of them niggas, they was into rap. They into everything that we doing. And I don't, you know what I'm saying? If you seen them, and some of these niggas, you'll be like, and I'm like, hell nah. So from there, I don't look at life the same. I stop looking at life, looking at another man as a man, because some of this shit is like on some other shit. So when you walking in the game or anything like that, them the ones that's getting a lot of motherfucking money. You know what I'm saying? Because they walking like baby, and I don't respect that. And I done seen them dudes, you know, in person. Before all of this shit and all of that kissing and shit, that shit, that ain't cool, bro. That shit worse than dresses and skinny jeans and all of that shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You don't do all that shit.
Showing affection, you know, towards another man, it's just, well, let's
get that ain't hip-hop.
Punk.
That shit ain't hip-hop.
No, that ain't,
they can't,
that ain't,
you know,
hip-hop at all.
Because you
right.
rap. Yeah, because they rap and they want to associate that shit with hip-hop. You know what I'm saying? But really, if you want to destroy something, you want to destroy hip-hop, you can push some niggas, a little group that's got wearing skinny jeans, dressing funny. If you push them to the top and say, this is what rap is, we getting told, because, for one, rap done went into all of this explicit. I ain't never been the one that wanted to just, because I done did shows where the kids and mamas, the parents and adults there, and I'm like, damn, I got all this cussing in my shit, you know. Let me make some songs so when shows come up, I can hit them with, you know, some other kind of stuff, some club music or something without all of that. But then the club music, if it ain't telling them to shake this and do that, now it's like,
right.
That's the only thing what's going on. So I ain't knocking no music hip. So it's like, it's gone, bruh. It's gone. So we got to find a way for to say at least this what it is. And I think that y'all got the solution. What y'all doing right now is this is what keep hip hop. You know what I'm saying, live, but, you know, we from Memphis, we from the South, so we really ain't a part of hip-hop, that's for one, so you know what I'm saying, I look at it like that, and they just trying to destroy the South sound, or just saying whatever the South music got going on with mixing this shit with the dressing, and that's, and they, you know, the fashion is taking over the sound more so than the music.
Yeah.
And I don't dress like that, so.
Well, it's
real
shit.
Yeah, I ain't either.
It's a real shit. My partner, DJ Villain, Laidback Entertainment, he just dropped an album today. You're going to love this. He's from Canada, and he dropped an album called North to South Connection, where it's nothing but Memphis artists. Got over 25 artists on that motherfucker. And, he just hit me up, man, said he wants to do a track with you. Yeah, the shit's hard as fuck, man. It's great to see dudes in other countries, you know, where, I mean, he's
got nothing. Yo, tell me this. Is y'all familiar with y'all familiar with DJ Memphis Mix?
DJ who?
Memphis. Memphis Mix.
No.
Man, that now you talking about Memphis history. For a minute, I thought y'all guys, I thought y'all was together. Now him, he from Albuquerque. He down in like Texas, down somewhere like Mexico, some little part, right down there, Austin, Texas, little ways down that way. And I'm talking about, yo, it's like, I'm gonna give y'all his link. Cause he on my page, and when y'all see his page, you can be like, okay, I see what you're saying. He owns
like
everything. Yeah, I'm the one that brought J-Dog into the game. Me and Al Capone.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Let's speak on this, man. I got a funny J-Dog story when you're done. But tell me about tell me about bringing J-Dog in the game. And for those who don't know who J-Dog is, man, this dude has been a Selecto hit for how many years?
Since, let me see, when did we bring him? A little bit after Gangsta Walk, 91, 92, we brought J-Dog in.
Huh.
And then he been, you know what I'm saying, by us running back and forth out to Selecto. One day he went out there looking for us. So he just sat out there. And he just, you know, and you would never think that he know what he know. Because when we went, me and Al Capone, what it was, we was in the studio. I'm trying to think. I think Al Capone brought him around. And he came in the studio, and I kind of thought he was handicapped. And so he was, you know, he was talking, and I said, yo, this dude. Yeah, I thought he was handicapped. And I showed him mad love, you know what I'm saying? Like, yo. And he said, because he came up to me, he said, that's okay, it's a pleasure, nice to meet you. And he greeted me, you know, with the white boy thing, hard body. So I was like, wow, look at this dude. Look at him. He said, I'm one of your biggest fans. I was like, get the fuck out of here. So later on that day, me, him, and Al took him home. And he said, you're welcome to come in. So we met his mom, and she really wasn't too fond of black guys. You know what I'm saying? He convinced her, you know, let us in the house or whatever. So we get in there. This dude got all of Memphis shit. All the cassettes. I'm like, yo, how do you understand? You know what I'm saying? How you sitting here playing all of this, you know, 666, this nigga, this, kill him that, pow, pow. I was like, nah, this shit ain't going together. But he had Memphis, you know, down pat. The reason why we fuck with J-Dog, because J-Dog came to the studio and got on that damn piano, and he played the shit out of that piano. Yeah. So we had him to play on a couple of songs, and we threw up a beat, and we needed some piano sinister shit. J-Dawg, get on
was
the piano.
Was he the inspiration for DJ Qualls and fucking Hustle and Flow?
No. What they did with Hustle and Flow, they tried to make it seem like that's what it, I kind of, you know, seen that, but the only person that could have put that part in Hustle and Flow was Al Capone. I supposed to have been in Hustle and Flow. It would have been about SMK, but I failed out with the dude who called himself came there with them, and he was like, SMK, if I get you in this movie, I gotta manage you. And he was from Atlanta, and I was like, I was in Arkansas for like about 2 months, and they told me, yo, they shooting a movie over here about Memphis, and they looking for you, SMK. So when I came, I met dude that was shooting a movie and everything. We sat in the room and talking. He said, everywhere I go, people bring up your name, you know, in this Gangster Walk. What is that about? So just when I got ready to talk to him, dude pulled me to the side and was like, yo, I'm your manager, you know, because I told you I'm going to plug you in from here. You're going to be big. So I didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. I'm already big. I got some big pockets. I got a little money, nigga. That's all. Nigga, you ain't talking about none. So, you know, I was like, and so Al then was like, you know, SMK, man, they don't know how they going to shoot the movie. So I was like, oh, okay, they going to follow me then. We going to shoot this motherfucker. And so if you look at the script, it was put together off a club and being how things was going. You know what I'm saying? Recording. Now, that situation that was going on there, that was more like for real Skinny Pimp them. They whole little ordeal. Like if you went to North Memphis and went to Skinny them crib and shit was going down, niggas had, you know what I'm saying, trying to do the music, niggas trying to pimp some hoes and trying to do their music.
Right.
That shit was for real, for real. So I think the Hustle and Flow thing, and they was trying to use J-Dawg, I looked at it like, that was J-Dawg right there, because that's how he played the role around us when we were in the studio. And he was trying, he didn't do the engineering part or nothing, they just did the keyboard part. And he, you know, I ain't never seen J-Dawg make no beat. He ain't got no rhythm. He don't got that. He know how to play that piano off of beat and shit. That's why we call it Sinister. Because he gonna be all off beat. Yeah, so.
Yeah, he definitely, you know, you call him up and he have you on the phone for hours talking about different, I mean, not just Memphis, though. I mean, fucking every city. You know, that dude's like an encyclopedia for underground rap music, like, man. Crazy.
Yeah, he could be like a historian of that shit. Once you collect that much shit, man, the longer you keep it, the longer it is a chance of that shit becoming more and more rare. It's hard to find physical copies of original shit. And people pay ridiculous amounts of money to buy these tapes and albums overseas.
And
J-Dawg got it. And he got a collection. He had a collection when we went to his house. And when I went in his room, his mom was like, I don't allow nobody in this room. And then I snuck on in there. And I seen all them cassettes. I was like, what the fuck is you doing? You spying on us, bro? I'm keeping you close up under us. We finna see what you doing, man. And then we use that as a promotional tool because we'll go to the mall. And, you know, we gangster, we thugs, we all out the hood. And we got guns in the car, that goddamn thing. And we deep. My crew be deep. Paul and them be deep. Squeaky and them deep. Skinny. Everybody got a crew and everybody deep. Saturday, we hit the mall.
Yeah.
And we had
that. Yeah, that's one thing about Memphis, man. Everybody deep. I will say that.
Yeah, everybody
deep.
And some people, remember, it go back to what I was telling you. Like, a lot of them with the rap. That's why I respect Paul on how he blew and the reason why he blew, because Paul, he used the whole gang thing real nice, you know what I'm saying? He had Gangsta Black and Player Live on the record, you know what I'm saying? These GD Vice Lords, you know what I'm saying? So that was like major, you know, like boom. But if you came to Memphis and seen where Player Fly stayed and where Gangsta Black stayed, you're a trip because they stayed right across the street from each other. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, yo. And now you're talking about when it's time to do a show and who be deep. Gangsta Black coming with probably 50 or 100 niggas. Player Fly coming with 50 or 100 niggas.
Yeah. All South Parkway, you know what I'm saying?
The whole Parkway. And that's right across the street from each other, bro. And that's how I knew that, like, I'm everywhere. I stayed in South Memphis. I had a house in Black Haven. And we ain't never used to go out to East Memphis because back then it's like, you know, it wasn't a lot of blacks staying out there. But when they tore down the project, it's like East Memphis opened up and Frazier and all of that was just, now you go out there, you'll be like, man, this black Frazier, everything's just black.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, you know, this
yeah,
is.
I come up in the Kings Gate on Winchester and Mill Branch. And
yeah,
I
see,
moved
that's
to
where
Memphis
I was at.
To like
I stayed
95,
in the Kings Gate.
Yeah, I did too on Queensland.
Okay. Yeah, so you was
in the Mafia and the whole nine. I met you through Cosmo years ago. You know what I'm saying? Like that's why I always knew I had when I started being a part of this show. And it's still a couple. Like I still want to get Endo and Blunt on the show as well. You know what I'm saying? Because
I could get them. I could
need
get
to be heard
husband.
Too.
Yeah, we
you
gotta
know,
have
them.
Let them know. Yeah, I'm gonna let them know though. Yeah, because Cosmo, I'm going to tell you, like Cosmo. Cosmo.
That's my guy.
Like,
and so many people that stole his style, too. So many people
yeah,
that stole his
but
shit.
See, Endo played a role with Cosmo, because that's Cosmo's uncle, you know what I'm saying? And Cosmo was just young, and I used to tell Cosmo, like, yo, you a better version of Endo because you listen. You ain't a better version of him because you can out-rap him. You can never out-rap that nigga. Endo is one of the codes. That's what people don't know. Like, I know Endo. And niggas can say and do what they want to do. Like, but Endo, he didn't give Paul and them that Endo when he signed to them. And he didn't give me that Endo when we did the record with Luke. He kind of came out of it a little bit, but he was imitating West Coast niggas. But if people really hear Endo do some Memphis shit, it'll blow their head, man. Cause he the king of that tongue twisting and all them styles. That Endo and his voice is incredible, but he for some reason he won't just keep doing that. I don't know if the music bothered him or something, but I always be like, yo nigga, cause I got a couple of songs and then I done heard him do some shit with some people, and if he kept coming like that he, I guess what he don't know is that when he come in a certain way, that this is him. Just like Skinny Pimp. Skinny had that style too. And then Skinny will rap this way and that be all right. You know what I'm saying? But if Skinny stayed doing these certain style with other niggas than took, then, you know, Skinny will be the man. Like the remember the Alphabet song? A, Acapulco.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I did that junk with the Isley Brothers junk up under it. You know what I'm saying? And that was on one of them projects. I forget the name of the project. And it was him and 211. But that was a Skinny Pimp solo junk. You know what I'm saying? Supposed to be like an interlude. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And he killed him with that. He killed him with that song, man. And to watch the whole crowd, because, you know what I'm saying, you, a lot of people didn't know their ABCs. And you try to sing along with this nigga. And you get lost on the ABCs, when he start rapping and feeling in the inside until you get to the alphabet again. And I was like, man, this nigga Skinny is the coldest. That nigga was the coldest. And A-Ball and them, too. I'm talking about...
Man, whatever happened to MVP? MVP, because he had a hard ass album too.
Clout.
See, MVP, I talked to MVP, and he, you know, I met him at one of the car stereo places. I was taking some cassettes in there, and he was like, you know, SMKI, you know, I like your beats, man. So we was talking, and you know, when they found out that, like, Endonym, if you get them $200, they'll come rap on your shit. So once niggas start using that part of the game, it kind of like cheated the music industry if you was the producer, because you could pay a nigga to get on your track, but that nigga don't really fuck with you, so you ain't going to get that full, you know what I'm saying, promotion out of that project if the nigga just featured on your shit. You know what I'm saying? If you got to hang with them niggas. So that's why a lot of us, you know, Skinny was down with Paul Nim, and he was down with Squeaky Nim, so that made him down with A-Ball. He had access to, you know, a lot of people that was on Squeaky side of the family, and then he had access to people on Paul's side. You see,
hey, we
got
a caller, SMK. Not to cut you off. Hey, 240, what's up?
Yo, what up? This is Lex Taliotis again. I'm not drunk this time.
Oh, that's good. That's good. What's up? How you doing? You got a legendary SMK on the line with you.
Yo, what up? I talked to you a couple times on Facebook, but something I wanted to ask you, I don't know if it was addressed in this because I came in kind of late, but how did the Pastor Troy and the Congregation album come about?
Yeah, okay, that's a good one. A lot of people ask me that, and I ain't really even told this story too much, but I'm going to tell you just because it was simple. But one, you know, Memphis had a whole on Atlanta rap and Troy from Augusta. And, you know, like I said, I travel and I be doing shows in different places. So I met Troy at this hotel, and we exchanged numbers and we talked. And so he kind of was, like, working on his music at that time, doing that the No More Playing GA. So he was hot, but he ain't had no new music out. So what I told him was when I got to Atlanta, y'all know Allen Henderson that played basketball for the Atlanta Hawks where he used to. And he was, you know what I'm saying, one of the star players for the Hawks. And he started a record label. And so I was up in Atlanta recording for his record label. Matter of fact, they came to Memphis and did an audition, and they did it at Skinny House. They wind up at Skinny Pimp House. And a lot of rappers auditioned for to get the spot, and I was the one that they wind up taking. And I wasn't even no rapper, like I said, like that. And I felt like it should have been Endo or Skinny Pimp or some or Al Capone or one of them. And they was like, nah, we want you. So when I got to Atlanta and was working on my project, Troy, they asked me who was going to feature on my album. I said, I'm only reaching out to one person. That's Troy. And then I said, Skinny Pimp, you know, for us from Memphis, and Al Capone. And when Troy came to the studio, Troy spoke, you know, we going through some beats, and then Troy was like, you know, SMK, you know, fuck recording on one song. Let's do a whole project together and fuck these nigga heads up. Memphis in Atlanta, I said, there you go. And we hit. We did that shit, and we came out past the Troy and the Congregation, and he already was signed to Universal. So I plugged that whole thing up with Memphis again. We went to Selecto Hit, and they pressed up 100,000 CDs, and they brought them to Selecto Hit, and within like 2 weeks we sold sound again like 67,000. So that was a relationship that me and Troy had built right there. We shot a couple of videos together, and EMI Records came in and Universal Records came in and put a stop to the record being independent. So, and they signed Troy to Universal, and that's when you seen the video cutting. But that's how me and Troy hooked up. He was supposed to have been featuring on there, and we wind up doing a whole project, me, him, and 1129.
Yeah, that Congregation album was a cold-ass album, too, man, especially for the time frame, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I think that was, like, what, late 99, early 2000 and shit?
It
was real. That was like some of the last, if you ask me, them was some of the last few years of the golden era of the hip-hop, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a matter of fact. That's where it's been a change. And see, that's why I say I know y'all shit. And y'all on top of it every point, because that's the exact, a lot of people don't know that's where the music industry changed, because like in Atlanta, the script clubs is the real clubs. That's where you go break the music at. And that was my test with that Congregation album, because you remember the song on the Congregation, Pussy Song, right? All these hoes selling pussy. When we go in the script club, me and 11, we used to get on the stage and we'll pay the DJ nigga, and we gonna dance, and them hoes dancing to the song, they making their money, and we on that bitch just lip syncing that junk. So we kind of like was like, yo, we need to start promoting our music. But I didn't want to make a lot of script club songs. That wasn't, you know, but they'll dance to anything that's more so that can make them dance, and that's, you know, crunk. And it happened to be Memphis shit all the time. So that's how we came into the game. With the Pussy Song, and Troy wasn't on that song, because I only let him get on so many songs, because I was trying to like help Troy with his career in a sense too, you know what I'm saying? And everything was falling in place, you know. But that project right there was like perfect timing, and a lot of people, I didn't get nobody no direction to say this is what rap is, because Billboard had said, you know, we got a plaque for selling 100,000 units, and they was like, you know, this was a real different produced album for to come out of the South. It was well produced from beginning to end.
Yeah, it was. That motherfucker was tight.
You know,
I'll never forget the white CD with the red lettering, you know what I'm saying?
Right. And see, I wanted to name it Second Corinthians, and we was going to name it the Ten Commandments, because that's all we was going to put on there, just 10 songs. And they was like, nah, and they put that book one, and then they did the Praying Hands. We was out of town. And when we came back, they had already pressed up the units. So I kind of
I was
going
to ask you, was it supposed to be like a book two to that too? I always thought when they said book one, I always
it is. It is a book two. It came out. I put that out. I put book two out and me and 11 sitting on the front of that jump. We both got on white.
Yeah.
We sitting in these crown chairs. And see, when I only pressed up 1,000 of them. That's what it was. I didn't press up a lot. And because I did that to make them mad, because they didn't want to pay us no money. You know what I'm saying? And then from there, that's when I had went to New York and I got the deal. That's why I say the music industry was at a change, because Atlanta had a lot of New York business. That's why I brought up the club, because when we was in the script club, it was a lot of people from, you know, New York in there for doing business. They got offices and everything in Atlanta. And because it's a hip-hop scene and, you know, marketing, promoting, you know, major labels got people stationed everywhere. But Atlanta was one of their major hubs. So it was trying to be in the script clubs and calling back and telling people, you know, what's popping and what. They just didn't have no promotion, no way to promote the South. And they didn't know that just give us the money, we promote ourselves.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that was the part with Troy. That was, you know, it was a lot of independent people that, like, y'all heard it, you know, Big Oomp now, Oomp Camp.
Yeah.
And see, they play a major role. Right. And Jelly play a major role in the whole Memphis movement, because Oomp had a lot of record stores in Atlanta. And that's how we sold the Pastor Troy and the Congregation, too, because Oomp and them had all of them boosts from the flea market, and he had a record store in every part, the Cab, College Park. He had them stores everywhere. So he kind of like, if you went in the store, you would see the wall again. number all Memphis right here. Boom. Whole wall. From cassettes, when cassettes was out, all the way to when CDs came out. And I always like to say I visit Atlanta. And then when I heard Troy, I was like, yo, you know, I wouldn't mind doing something with this dude. And the timing was so perfect because one though Atlanta ain't had no gangster rap out. Only Sammy D. Sam was the only one out. Then you
Hard
had
Boys
Ghetto
too,
Mafia. Right, you had the Hard Boys, Ghetto Mafia, and you had Kilo. So you could count them on one hand who was the gangster rap. But when you, like I told you, once again, when you ride through the hoods of Atlanta at the mall, and the cops ran by, all you heard was Memphis.
Man,
but Memphis
heard a
rappers
going to
come
Pat.
In there performing. Oh, Gangsta Pat tore it up. He was like the first wave of events going down in Atlanta. You know what I'm saying? Because that's why I told you, Pat used to be out promoting. I go to Houston. I come out of the club. I hear nothing but Memphis again. And I hear a bunch of Houston rap. I hear rap out here in Memphis. Like, oh, shit, you know. Because of the issue when you come to Houston, Lecto Hit was able to try to in these territories. And I
you know what I always liked the me going down when I moved to Memphis and being able to go home. I'm originally from the Chicago area and going home with all of this Memphis music that nobody had ever heard, you know what I'm saying? Like, I used to be one of the first guys going up there with shit, and even having family members steal tapes and lie about it. I come back the next time and ain't that my damn tape? I thought you didn't have it type shit. You know what I'm saying? But I always thought that shit was cool, man, to go back because it was so many different groups. And sometimes we buy tapes on our way out. Like, we about to get ready to leave to go to Chicago. But before we leave, we stop at Music Aquarium on Winchester and get a couple tapes or something, you know what I'm saying, and get right. It was always something new. And y'all always kept the kept shit popping
kept
in
coming.
There, man.
Yeah.
Sure,
that was
one
of the things.
DJ Quick at first.
Exactly. I remember that era. Because when I used to see Pat, I said, damn, this nigga look like goddamn DJ Quick. And you
they
know
both
what I'm
had,
saying?
You know, he had Gangsta Groove and then Quick had Quick's Groove. And I asked Pat about
that.
Yeah,
he kind of.
He said that they bumped into each
Pat
other.
Smart,
and they,
Yeah,
go ahead.
They did. Nah, they did. They kind of like had a show together in Memphis. And, you know, that shit was crazy. That's when I seen both of them. And I was like, man, these niggas look just alike. That shit was crazy.
Yeah,
you know, there was the
day. Hell, man.
Yeah.
That dude is, you know, his dad.
Oh,
you know,
talented. Super talented. Man,
I
said we watch him produce him. Yeah. I watch him produce some stuff. And his dad, legendary, you know, it's people. So, you know, I watched him put stuff together, and, man, Pat chopped it up all kind of ways, man. People didn't even know how cool me and Pat, you know, was, and we always been cool from day one. Never had no problem. I'm cool with all of them, with everybody.
Right, I was just about to say, man, I ain't never heard nobody, you know, like, had no beef or none of that type of shit. Dealing with SMK in Memphis, and you done worked with them all, you know what I'm saying, from, like, like we were saying earlier, from, but who is, like, one of your most favorite, or the one you like working with the best out of all the guys you done worked from Memphis now, or even if they ain't from Memphis, but they came up and came out of Memphis, like, who is one of the best ones that you like to work with, or probably even haven't even worked with yet, if that was even possible, because I'm pretty sure you done worked with them all.
Yeah, it's like in a sense that's kind of like it's hard to say, but at the same time I could say it because I got a history with Al Capone, and no matter what situation he always come and get me, like with the E-40 situation, you know what I'm saying? He knew that, you know, let me go get my man because I know he gonna make sure, you know, because I could have got the whole project, and see that's what people don't know is that the whole music industry always was about publishing. And they used to be like, SMK want to produce the whole project. And I was like, nah, if y'all want to make some money, that's why I want to produce the whole project. But if y'all just want to make a record to prove something, then, you know, and that's why Paul wind up, you know, making money, because he started figuring out the part of the game that I was in, the publishing. All the other shit is just cutting records. But, you know, so if you want to make some money, then get your publishing side of the game right. And so as I worked it with somebody with Skinny Pimp, me and him had a good go for a minute, him and 211. And mm-hmm. I like the skinny
one. 211 supposed to be getting out of jail or something too,
right? Yeah, I think he out. Yeah, I think he out. He on Facebook. I chatted with him. And I think him and Skinny, I love to see them go back in the studio. They supposed to be in there doing something together. Just to do it, you know what I'm saying? Like Blunt. Yeah, Blunt and Endo need to get back in there. And see, I talk with Carmike. And, you know, everybody, they always reach out to me. It's just that, like, right now, I'm trying to line myself up for to put myself in a position as a good consultant for Memphis, and that can help put, you know what I'm saying, the business format, and where me, Skinny Pimp, Gangsta Pat, all of us, that's where we at right now. You know, like, I would love to do a show with all of us on that jump together.
Yeah,
you know,
that should be cold,
Memphis,
man.
Memphis Underground
to
Tour.
Shit.
Yeah.
I promise
you, know, and, yeah. Hey, and that just might happen, but, you know, his only thing is I got to have one talk with Paul, because, like, in 2 months I'm going to shoot the Gangsta War movie. But the most important part is this soundtrack that we're doing. And the soundtrack is damn near everybody out of Memphis, but I'm producing the music on everybody. So I got to get Paul a track, so it's going to be a talk. And I'm kind of going to come at him probably last, and I'm saying this so that, it's, you know, anybody here, they can let him know. I'm going to come at him last for this project, him and Juicy J, because I know they're going to be the ones that's saying,
shit, I'm about to
nah,
say, you never
know.
Paul
you know.
Might be listening right now. Shit, ain't no telling.
Yeah,
you
but you know, I fuck
times,
with
too.
Paul. That's why
yeah.
That's why I put him last, because he, to me, I like what Paul used to do, because Paul used to come to my house and get me and say, SMK, you know, I need a couple of beats. You know, I don't want to do them at your crib. You know, we could go to my crib. And we go down there and get cussed out by his mom and shit, then we head out to the back of the room and do what we do, you know what I'm saying? And then a lot of people didn't know I was producing stuff. You know, they'll come in and he'll just be hitting record, and then he'll be doing some scratching. And so if you rapping on it, you wouldn't never, you know, think SMK did that. You'll just be saying Paul or
rest
whatever.
Rest in peace,
you know,
the Lord Infamous too, man. You got
exactly,
any
that's my
memories
dude.
You can share, Lord?
Yeah, now I got a memory with dude right there. That's my little brother right there. And he was in high school when I met them. And he was like, SMK. He was looking at me all mean and shit. He was like, yo, I like your beats. And he was like, I want to rap on some of them. He said, but, you know, I got to let Paul, you know, pick them out for me. So we was at the, we was doing the show. Matter of fact, Paul and I was doing a party at the school in Whitehaven. So I went up, they called and asked me to come up to the school, so I came up there. So Lord Infamous go outside to the car to get something, and I'm like, yo, why is it taking him so long to come back in here to the gym? So some told me to go outside, so I go out to the parking lot, and some other gang dudes got Lord Infamous hemmed up on the side of the building with some guns and stuff. So I get my shit out the car, and I come over there, and I'm like, what the fuck going on? So Lord, like, yo, man, they, you know, I forget what Lord was claiming or whatever, but I know that they was pressing him. So I get to talking to the dude. I was like, nah, this ain't going down right here like this. So the dude, what it was, they wanted to be really down with Paul, and they was just jealous and hating. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I told him, like, yo, let dude go. So they let Infamous, you know, get up out of the little hole or whatever. Then they was like, man, we really was just, you know, trying to get on with the music, man, and they don't want to let us in there. So we was asking him to let her. I was like, nah, you know. So I talked to dude and them. I said, y'all too, you know, y'all don't even go to school, so y'all shouldn't be, you know, up in this little function. So they understood that, and I gave them my number and shit. And it was some niggas from that little project from Pepper Tree. And
yeah,
then,
so they was at Hillcrest. This was at Hillcrest.
Right, that's what
that's the school
exactly.
I went to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so I'm pretty sure I'm remembering these shows, because I remember they used to do shows at the school, man.
At the school, right? And I came up there to do perform the Gangsta Wall, but that was my Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when me and him became, we just, you know, just became real cool. And I see, matter of fact, I seen Lord some months before, you know what I'm saying, he passed, and we was talking. You know what I'm saying? Right on Park, where I was like, what you doing in this little project? You know, I went up in there to try to find me something to smoke on, and I'm like, yo, and I run into this nigga. I go up in there, he's sitting at the table and talking about SOK. And, you know, he was sick there, he had his cane and shit, and I was like, nigga, what, you know, what's wrong? He's like, oh, man, you know, I'd have had a stroke, you know. I said, oh, you a soldier, nigga, you know, fucking with him and shit. But, you know, rest in peace to my brother right there, man. That's my dog, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was one, and I can attest to that too. Hey, prayers when I was down there, man, it's certain ones that they, even when they was having their little fame in the city, that, you know, some people get the big head at times, especially when you out on the town, you down on bill and shit.
Right.
You know, niggas wanna floss and they wanna do this and that, but it's certain ones that always keep it real, and Lord Infamous was one of them guys, man, and Crunchy Black too. He always kept it hood with the hood guys. It wasn't like, oh, I got money, I do this and I do that, even though you know this shit, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, you know what I'm saying? They kept it real, and that's why they could go to the neighborhoods and don't have to really worry about, you know, you always got to watch your back, but they the type of cats that everybody going to watch out for them because they showing love when they come through. A-Ball,
except
too, man. A-Ball always came through the neighborhood, too.
Except when they're getting hemmed up on the side of a building somewhere.
Yeah. And then he said that was at the school, Prez Hillcrest High School, man. It's going day. It used to be going down in there, man.
Yeah, the Vikings, man. Yeah.
Home
exactly.
of the Vikings. Gangsta
Viking.
Pat went
yeah.
there too. Every time I talk to Pat, he say he went to he a Viking too. Hillcrest Viking.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you, and see me, I go to all the schools. And see, some of the schools, they don't even go, you know what I'm saying, go over to the other school. That's because it was the projects was up then. All the projects, Hurst Village, and, you know, all of them was up, you know. So school was different, and me and Al Capone, and we did a school tour, and we got kicked off of the school tour because we got out to East Memphis. I forget what school, or Kirby High School, I think. And it was, like, all white. So the little girl stood up and said, do y'all got a gun on y'all now? And so they kind of looked at it like we was promoting music that have people looking at us like, this is what we do.
Y'all was some gangsters. Yeah,
man.
Not only was y'all gangster walking, y'all was gangster walking.
Yeah, we was gangster walking, goddammit. So Al Capone had an album out with the damn gun on the cover, and I told him, I said, don't do that. So that kind of, like, shorten our little ride, you know, tour.
Shout out to
Memphis
City Schools. Fuck them.
Yeah, Memphis City School, Mayor Harrison. God damn it.
Yeah, man, that was one of the most backward school systems ever. But man, Memphis is one of them cities, man. And I'm glad you represented it well, man. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of cats don't know, like, the sound and them beats that. That good ticking, that's what we call it down there. That nigga ticking, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You was one of the guys that started that shit in them beats, man. A lot of cats don't know that shit either.
And now I'm glad you brought that up because that started the South. To me, that was the start of the South sound. And that's what EMI had a problem. They said, why come all your beats go? I said, man, fuck y'all. I jumped up on the table and I played Gangsta Walk. And I turned it up loud, and they had a system in that joint, like a concert. And so it was like about 11 people on the table, real big. I turned that joint up. Dave Gossett sat back by the window. He said, oh, my God, I'm finna be fired. I jumped up on the table, started Gangsta Walking, boom, boom, boom. I should have brought Crunchy Black. Because, you know, Crunchy Black was rolling with us. He wasn't with Paul and them. He got down with Paul and them a little bit during that time when I told you about Lord Infamous. And see, and Crunchy Black hung with his little partner, and them two niggas used to be doing jukes. So, you know what I'm saying? They just, you know, fucking with Paul. Well, people don't know, Paul a real-ass nigga. That's a real street nigga. Niggas can play Paul cheap if they want to. You bet not. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he from the hood, man. You know, he riding them off
straight
from
the hood. Yeah. That nigga said, stay right in the motherfucking hood right down the street from me. You know what I'm saying? Fucking got them off Elvis Presley. And so it's like, That whole era right there where Paul was doing his thing, you know, he kind of like put Memphis together because he had Skinny Pimp, now from North Memphis. Then he had Gangsta Black, Player Fly. He was always putting different artists together on the 3-6 Mafia project from different areas.
Yeah.
And that's how the music was able to circulate because them niggas show couldn't go here. They could go where they want to go, but when they go, it's going to be some shit. Every time, you know what I'm saying? And they know that. So, like, we hit the malls and shit, you know. But I know everybody, and I fuck with everybody. So I kind of, like, you know, was, like, seeing that how separated everything was and divided. Just like now, you know what I'm saying? I would love to see Yo Gotti and 3-6 and Juicy J, 8 Ball, everybody who really like up the par, like you know, reach back or do something to make Memphis be a whole. Cause that's how
they
put the chokehold in the game.
Because it seemed like when Paul and them had the Profit Posse shit going on right around 95, 96, they used to ride around town in the orange Suburban with the Profit and shit. Like, but they had they had guys from all over. They had, you know, M. Child and them. They all from the Mound. They had niggas from,
wow,
you know,
exactly,
Frazier Boy and them. Like, so it's like everywhere you go, you're going to hear they shit. And then even when they was beefing with Fly and them, people bump Fly song and then they bump Paul and them song right after it. So it was like, even though they was beefing, the city wasn't divided when it came to the music, because if nobody needs nobody come on. Every time I'm in Memphis, if that song come on, the motherfucking
everybody,
club, party, no matter where you at on the street, they lose it for that one song. You know what I'm saying? So I always respect Memphis on that shit, too, how they still keep the underground classics get played more in Memphis, for real, a lot of times than in other cities.
Because you're right. I appreciate you saying that too, because you know, like right now, I know how relevant it is that a lot of the rappers in Memphis, that the young cats don't know the history too much of Memphis. Like my little nephews and stuff, you know, towards Charlotte, I be telling they like, nah, we ain't never heard of them, and we were just talking about Infamous. And then, like, 2 days after that, I said, yo, you know, nephew, you remember that dude we was talking about? And I told you I knew him. I said, he just passed away. He was like, damn, wow. You know, and they was coming out with their new shit. Well, you know, not new like that, but as coming together, you know, because I always liked the Gangsta Boo. You know, I like when she do her thing, you know, because she always was the, like, the mysterious one for as a female rapper, and she could really, like, you know, I like her style. And and I was glad to see them do that, what they was doing. And the only thing that I just, like, don't do something and then just be doing it as a competition. Because the competition, once you done got to a certain level, you don't have to do it for a competition no more. You know? And I felt like
see people work together,
Yeah, so that was a good thing that, you know, that I'm glad that Paul did that. You know, that was a big plus, you know, and just be executive. You know, me, like right now, I'm trying to be the executive behind other groups and other independent labels or whatever that they got going on. You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to be up under me or sign to me or no shit like that. You know, that's why I fuck with everybody, because I wasn't into that. You know, I ain't never started no record company, so that's how I stayed out of the clear of that. But I had my little clique around me, and, you know, and they was all doing their music and representing the production company. But for us trying, you know, me being a label like Paul and Squeaky, I wasn't trying to put out music like that. So I didn't play that role, you know, too much in the coming up of the game, because I was producing on people's records, you know, more so than just, you know, trying to be a record company.
You were structuring projects together and, you know, putting out music like you do with the Marquise, you know what I'm saying? You know, I was amazed to see that come together, because I know JC and Trick, you know, they were working with him, and you know, you came in there and started working with them, and you guys all just collectively put together something, and, you know, too bad it went under the radar. We got it in the Murder Dog.
Yeah.
Other than that, it kind of went under the radar, man. What was people's take in Memphis on Marquise? Did he do any shows over there?
Nah, I think they recognized who he was. But see, Marquise ain't never been the one to say, look, y'all, I'm a star. He ain't finna do that. That ain't his style. So he kind of like, you know, Memphis just, you know, took to him, and then, you know, his whole style of music was, now the females, you know, they was on him the hard, but as far as the dudes, you know what I'm saying, he wasn't even trying to click like that anyway, you know, and he kind of like, he just wanted to do it. He could have, you know, we would have went hard on a couple of records that probably would have hit, and he would have, you know, he just can't use that name, Brother Marquise, you know. Because it's some other, that's when I learned that it's other people that's in this business that, you know, that basically have power dealing with your career. And that's why he wound up back down to Joy Boy.
Yeah.
So, and Joy, you know, because that was the executive push behind Luke Records.
Yeah, it's crazy because, yeah, when Luke went bankrupt, Joy Boy just came in. Wasn't Weinberger Luke's attorney at one time?
Yeah, he was his attorney, right. And he the one, yeah. Weinberger, I done rolled with Weinberger, and he just told me everything. You know, he was like, yeah, you know, we the one that make Luke. We make rappers. And I was like, what do you mean make rappers? And that kind of fucked my head. And right now this day, I look at niggas like, yo, nigga, you ain't doing that with the music. That's an endorsement. That's why you got $10 million from Nike, from water, this or that. That ain't got nothing to do with the music. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's all a promotional. Now it got something to do with the music once the product and shit is in place. You know, and so it kind of like a lot of stuff was going in that direction. And that's why I look at, like, Brother Marquise, you know what I'm saying, just – he didn't want to get caught up in that because he know that lifestyle of people standing outside your house and, you know, trying to get you in trouble and you don't know who to trust, you know. So that's kind of like, that's why we did what we did, and he kind of like had a regular life. And I felt him on that, you know what I'm saying, because you can't just run around and just, you know, be Brother Marquise 24/7. You got to be... You know what I'm saying, yo?
Yeah, you got to be who you is for real. Yeah, you know what I mean. Like
that's what I had to go through. You know what I'm saying? Because I was
especially when you got children,
you had to do the same thing.
Yeah, you know your kids. You can't let your kids, you know, see you grow up and this who you is. You know, like Will Smith got to tell his dad, no, I'm not so and so. No, no, tell his kids. But now if you bring your kids into the same shit you in, then you can't tell them nothing that what you not. You know, you're showing them that person, that this whole fake facade.
Right. Who is my dad?
A lot of
pretty
people,
much. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and that's what me and my daughter, because I got a daughter in Memphis that's 21, and she real pretty, and I told her, you know, be careful who you let know who your dad is. You know what I'm saying? Because people are taking
advantage
of you in a different kind of way. So, you know, she was like, yeah, dad, you know, but some people figure it out on their own, you know, and, you know, they punch my name up and then your name come up and SMK and they be asking me, you know, because I was like, yeah, you know, they could do that, but, you know, just keep that because she grew up under me, you know, SMK, but I always was like, no, Sean Pross, your daddy Sean. So she.
Yeah, I was just about to say, people only know what you let them know anyway. A lot of times people would tell on themselves, so if she just keep it like, well, my name popped up, that's just an error. You know, just keep it moving, you know what I'm saying?
Because
in Memphis, he is one of them cities, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, cats will probably try to, man, I never even thought about nothing like that until you just said that. Like,
but, you know,
I can see.
My life.
I can see that.
I live that life. I used to get phone calls because I was with a girl there, and everybody, Skinny Pimp, everybody knew who my girl was. You know what I'm saying? I met my girl at 380, and it was like 900 people inside the club. It only hold 8, and they done got like 900, close to 1,000 people in that bitch. And she was at the front row, and so her and her little clique, she was like, I came to see SMK. So I stopped the music, and I said, who you came to see? She was like, SMK. She wanted me to sing that song, Bitches. You know, if a bitch be a bitch, then let her bitch be a bitch.
She
said, because my goddamn husband, because niggas could be bitches too. And then the crowd was crazy. I had the mic down there, but I was like, oh, I'm finna rock this bitch. So I, you know, I did my thing and shit. And then they got to fighting, and I took her home with me. You know what I'm saying? She was drunk, so I pulled up on stage. We hit the limo through the back door and got on down out of the crowd. You know what I'm saying? And that was it.
Hey,
you know,
Beale Street, hey, friends, I wish Prez could have got a chance to experience old school Beale Street. Like, if you go to Beale Street now, you can still enjoy yourself in this more controlled area. But back then, man, it was just
man,
you see 8-9-year-old kids walking down Beale Street at, like, midnight. You know what I'm saying? Like,
that was it.
It's kids down here, man.
Because the project is right there.
You know what I'm saying? It was just all live, just especially on them good summer days. Fair Day, the county fair, and all that shit. And then, you know,
man,
people going to go down the Southern Heritage Classic.
I used to live there.
You see all the rappers down there. They be down there, man, you know.
Everybody
you can trust them. You can see 8 Ball, MJG, or and then you go up the other block, and then they go to 36 Mafia. They chilling on this block, and then you go up that way. They go squeaking them up there, and then you see Gangsta Pat and them rolling down the block. That's how it was, man. It was a blow for my mind because I was a fan of the music, and I was just hooked on Memphis culture, period, when I first moved down there because I was going to school down there. So it was easy for me to fall in and to look at it years later and to go to other places, and people know that. That's why I have to always try to find cats like you to get them on here to tell the story, man, because a lot of – even people from my era, they never got a really good chance to – you know, people hated on y'all, didn't want to put – y'all want no MTV, or y'all didn't get the shine like you really should. Fuck it, we give it to them now.
Right.
You know?
And that's crazy you said that, because I used to tell niggas, I said, yo, y'all going to be big. You're going to do it big. And they used to look at me like, SMK, what you talking about? And like Crunchy Black, like I said, Crunchy Black, he was down with SMK. He wasn't down with Paul and them. You know what I'm saying? They knew him. The niggas knew each other. But then he just stopped. We used to be looking for Crunchy. And then he with Paul. You know what I'm saying? And then that was it, you know, because it was the gangster walk. Matter of fact, Crunchy Black, he in the
and
gangster
you know,
walk.
You know, all them, they folks anyway. So when you say gangster walk, and they all G's anyway. So that's probably why they navigated closer to each other anyway. Cause,
and see,
you
and
know,
guess
the,
what?
The Kings game was the wins list back then. That shit was deep. Yeah.
I never paid attention to that part. I was like, all the folks they supported me like, and I was like, oh, you know, because that wasn't my intention. But it was I wasn't looking at the word gangster, and I was like, oh shit, you know. But fuck it, I'm riding. So everywhere that I was going, like some niggas was like, yo, SMK, you disrespecting us, and I used to be like, what you mean? I'm disrespecting you. You know, one, you gangster. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna overlook that. You know, then they turn around and say, you SMK, you South Memphis killer.
Yeah, everybody used to think you're South Memphis
nobody
killer. So, I remember that LMG shit was going on too, and motherfuckers used to trip off that shit. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah, and they,
people gravitate more to it. When y'all say gangster walk, it may if you go into a like 380 Bill, for instance, and you got Vice Lords on one side and Gangsters on the other side. When they playing the song Gangsta Walk, it just make the gangsters feel like they more
superior,
you know,
like
because
it's for them.
Because of the words that you're saying. And at the same time, you got the dudes on the other side that don't want to say gangster at all, but they still want to get bucked too. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of shit jumped off because of that type of shit, though, for real. I ain't even going to lie to you.
I never knew that, but I went everywhere in Memphis performing that song. Every little club, outside, in the driveway, I performed that
song. Because they loved it, man. They loved it, and everybody knew it was for the city because everybody was doing it. You know,
and that's why
I didn't see some cats, like they say Crunchy Black
the
best juggler. No, I didn't see some cats that could probably slice Crunchy head, but if it wasn't for guys like him, them dudes they would never be able to slice his head if he wasn't the one that came out slicing everybody else's head.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like smacking the pool and shit like that. Niggas don't know nothing about that when it come to Memphis and shit.
Exactly.
That's an Olympic sport, you know what I'm saying? They don't even know.
and that's what had happened. Like Ice Cube and them came and they performed, I think it was over at Liberty Land, at the Coliseum up in there, the Liberty Land little convention place. And I just happened to be just getting in town. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to fall up in this concert. And I get to the concert. They let me in backstage, and I run into K97, Stan Bell. So Stan Bell sees me. He's like, oh, guess who we got in the house? SMK. And it was so crowded in the place. Next thing you know, they was like, come out here and perform Gangsta Walk. Man, I get out there and did Gangsta Walk. The whole thing got to moving, and that jump. Ice Cube and them came out. Them niggas looking, they can't even put on their clothes. They like, what the fuck going on? And that's when I knew. I was like, yo, this song is a beast, and they gonna ban me. You know what I'm saying? Doing this song places, and that's how it was with that gangster walk. Kind of like you said, you know, it was a way of life for Memphis, and I never knew the potential in certain aspects where it was going and where it wasn't. and Lamont Garden, you know what I'm saying? They kind of like, you know what I'm saying, weren't taken to certain things. I thought they used to have a problem with me, but I used to be dead up in them projects. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't scared to go in none of them. And I told them, you know what I'm saying, SMK stand for South Memphis King. You know what I'm saying? It ain't got, I ain't got
right.
to do with it. I ain't say I was the king of North Memphis. That's how I tell the leaders. I ain't the king of Westwood. I ain't the king of Parkway. I said.
Hello? I think we lost SMK.
Yeah.
Man, call drop. Man, he's a hell of a show, man. You really, guys are talking about some serious Memphis history right here. So if you guys are fans of Memphis rap, this is real good for you to hear.
Hey, look, Chris, and I love to hear him do some shit with Villain them too. Like out of all the guys that Villain them had on their shit, that'd be real interesting to see what they can come
Villain,
up with.
Villain already just told me, man, that he wants to work with him. Hey, go out and get that album, Villaination, North to South Connection. It's on iTunes right now. It's featuring, like, what, 25, 30 Memphis artists?
Hell
crazy.
Yeah.
How the fuck
hey, they got more.
I mean,
hey, look, they got. I'm about to say they got more Memphis cats than Memphis cats got Memphis cats on they Memphis cats album.
Yeah, that's like the biggest Memphis compilation in a decade.
Yeah.
It takes you to the minds of Al Capone's Memphis Underground Hustlers. It's
yeah.
Chock full of fucking dude. I mean, MC Mac, Koopsta, and he's got another one coming out. That's got Lord Infamous, Cavius. He's gonna have him. He's gonna try to get SMK on there. It's gonna be crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm gonna play the fucking North to South right fucking now. And hopefully, SMK will call back in. But if not, man, hell of a fucking show.
Yeah.
Man. Thank you for putting
Shout
this one together,
man.
Mac.
Yeah, Prince, I always try to put anything together. Man, I be trying to hit up. I just try to make sure it's somebody that can fit what the fuck we doing. I'm not just going to try to hit anybody up, because he was, you know, sold this or he had this record or he was, man, if it's on that swag shit, so some of my friends that be trying to hit me up and help me out with shit, don't even fucking inbox me some shit that you know. You know what I'm saying? I'm not finna call them or contact them. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even got to say no names and shit. But some people do that, prayers. They try, and I want to give them shots out for trying to help me out and find motherfuckers that want to hear. But don't say you know somebody that know 2 Chainz. I don't want that motherfucker on this show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want him on this motherfucker if he paid us some money to be on the show. We gank his ass because when we take the money from him and say, yeah, we're going to have you on, and then we'd have him thinking he on the show and wouldn't nobody
hey.
Even be listening. This shit wouldn't even be recording.
Hey, yo. Let me tell you something, Paulie. Take the money and send it as a gift. Fucking gift.
Yeah,
that
so
way,
you might as well just send it as a fucking...
Send concealed cash.
It's a donation
page. I always like concealed cash.
Sure.
You know, just tape that shit up like it's a big fucking brick, like it's a goddamn wad. You know what I'm saying? And put that shit in about 5 fucking boxes. You know, and send it to me. And if it don't
get
here, Fred,
every now and then somebody will hit me up and be like, how come y'all ain't never had such and such on the show? Or y'all ain't had, and it's always some swagged ass motherfucker, man. Like, even if they
like,
old school, they're not doing nothing now. It's still,
You got motherfuckers
like, man,
that
I don't want
Kid and Play on the fucking show, man. I ain't bringing no fucking Kid and Play on this shit. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
right.
And people got to understand, too, we're constantly trying to build up this archive. Last week, we had a big site for Thug Life, you know what I'm saying? So
exactly,
week,
yeah, I want to hear.
Here's
right.
SMK.
All right.
Hey, we were just talking about, you know what I'm saying, all the shit you guys were talking about, man. It's crazy. Looking back, you know what I'm saying, 20-some-odd years later, what do you remember most about the Memphis rap scene that you helped create?
I think what I helped create was I really didn't create nothing. I just took what they was doing, and I just, you know, did it in a more cleaner way. Like they had their drums off, the hi-hat would be a little bit off beat or something. You know, they couldn't get the metronome. You know, they didn't know how to work some of the equipment. And they used to use a Boss drum machine, and I used the SE-1200. So that was my trick. I used it. They all used the Boss, and it came with the sounds already in it. So they all had this little boing, boing, boom. It had some boom, but when I put that 808 inside that SB-1200, you going to feel it. You ain't just going to hear it. And that was my catch. I think that's what I kind of contribute to the game.
You talk. I think that's what Paul and them took from you, though, using them SBCs and shit. Because the earlier tapes, they didn't have, like you said, they had to see. Yeah, because by the time they got to like DJ Paul 16 and shit, they started switching it up. And by the time they had the Mystic Styles out, they was on, and it came all off the shit y'all was doing. Gangsta Pac. You know what I'm saying? All that shit, man. I seen that shit firsthand myself too.
Yeah. Cause see, I sampled a lot. Like I pay somebody to come in and play the keyboards, but I wouldn't. You ain't gonna play on top of my shit. I'm gonna snatch that piano riff and I'm gonna chop it up inside the SP, and then I'm gonna bang the, you know, cause then it's gonna be on one of my editorial documentaries. Because I still got the SP, and I'm gonna do something and show them this how I came into the game like this. But that drum machine was something that everybody looked at and was like, damn, that's the drum machine. So Squeaky was like, if I had that, I'd be making beats better than you, SMK. So I said, you know what? I got an extra one at the house. I'm gonna go get it, and I'm gonna bring it to you and sell it to you, nigga. And I want to see you do that. So I went and got the SP, and I sold it. That's what I did. Lock them in the trunk and a couple of other junts over at his house. And I just did the beats fucking around, and that's how I did. I left them with shit and a lot of shit that they was using, you know, Trigger Man samples. And come on,
I was about to say, you're one of the earliest ones to use a Trigger Man sample, and it's almost like a staple of if somebody want to get a Memphis feel for a gangster walk or get bucked. Or we call buck jumping and shit, you know what I'm saying? For one of them songs, they always got to have that Trigger Man in the background.
Exactly. That's why I
shit,
told
even
you.
Even that T.I. song, they had that Ball song, him and old swag-ass Lil Wayne, you know what I'm saying? That was all y'all shit, man. That's all y'all shit, if you ask me.
But
you know what I'm saying?
New Orleans, get down. They always use the same shit like Memphis. That was another city where it's like, they kind of like, influence, I don't know, you know, they had their own culture too, and they just reminded me of this. And but it was that Trigger Man. I was in New Orleans,
Trigger Man,
like 90, 91, 92. And I'm hearing Trigger Man. I'm
crazy.
Like, whoa. Yeah, so you know, but that Trigger Man, like I said, it's what I was doing. I was sampling memorable pieces from songs. Like I could have made a hit record anytime because it was all I had to do was take a piece of something that was already a hit and that they know and just loop it and then add on some kick to it and this and that. And that's what Paul basically was, you know what I'm saying, doing. Like, they wanted me to sample a lot of the old school pimp music and stuff like that, Curtis Mayfield and shit, you know. So I killed that.
We
you know,
call
that pimping. Part, yeah, that pimping. And so, like, Skinny Pimp had that the Mac of the Year. That shit was so hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. And I think Paul had did. I had did one. Like a lot of shit I was doing, they'll go and, you know what I'm saying, niggas was redoing it because they knew where the samples came from. And then I ain't like making music like that no more where everybody, you know, can go use
the
same
sample. Do you think it came down to a point where everybody was trying to one-up each other, like, oh, SMK got Ozzy Brothers sample beat. I'm finna take that one. I'm finna make mine a little bit better than he is. Or you think that's kind of what drove it, a little bit of the competitiveness? Because I always thought that everybody in Memphis was competitive. Because everybody, we the shit. You know what I'm saying? No matter
what
clique you with, you know, niggas in Memphis say we don't buy none, you know?
Yeah, but see, what was making them competitive was the gangster walk. It was the dance. Because the music really wasn't doing it because they weren't paying attention to no rappers really until, like, I kind of, like, came on. Pat was the only one they was paying attention to. 8-Ball and them was all of them was birthing through OTS. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Edge and you know what I'm saying? And Tony, Big Tony, you know what I'm saying? Rest in peace. So, and Pat, but, you know, them was the ones that basically, like, I was seeing, you know, trying to make it, make Memphis have a business with the music. And so, you know, like, Squeaky them, they was down there at this little, they used to be at this game room and doing stuff down there, like little talent shows and playing their music or whatever. But it was always, everything was always around that gangster wall. And that's how, like I say, that's how I came into it, because when they was DJ, when Squeaky was DJing, he was playing the Trigger Man and the Too Short and the Rodney O and Joe Cooley. So he was playing memorable songs. And so now I would take the Joe Cooley, you know, the DJs and the MCs, and I loop that shit in the drum machine. So only thing they knew about looping was getting that, you know, the Casio shit. You hold it up to the speaker and sample it and loop it back and forth. And they was really using shit like that. And I'm like, nah, bro. Yo, it's a such thing as a drum machine or a sampling keyboard. So Paul had the sampling keyboard. He did get smart. And he knew how to work his little samples and his shit, chop shit up. So I wasn't mad at Paul. Paul wasn't like no weak nigga to the beats. He had some ideas. You know what I'm saying?
And,
Juicy J was creative to me. He was more like, you know, come up with the concepts. But he was just down with Paul. They was, you know, like, shit, good buddies or whatever.
But like one nigga on the boards and you got your other nigga on the, sitting on the side of you while you,
right.
You, tell, you know
yeah.
what I'm saying? Y'all give y'all just vibing off each other and shit, yeah.
Yeah, so they was the first clique, you know, producers together like that. You know, they complimented each other. And then they had Homicide, Nigga Nine, and they had a whole crew, Coops the Nigga, and like I had went down to Paul House and I worked on four or five songs for Coop EP, and I had seen Coop and Coop was like, yeah, SMK man, I told you to fuck with me, see Paul fuck with me, and he didn't know little enough I did fuck with you, nigga. It's just that my circle already big enough, I can't bring you around these niggas, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Shit. They been feeling like, you know, I've been around for 3 years. I'm up next. But I wasn't – we was getting money just in other kind of shit that I was doing. So I really kept my little family fed in certain ways. But we wasn't no – like, I don't know, you know, this is who I'm finna drop next. Because I was the only one that's like – I didn't know when I was going to drop. Because, you know what I'm saying, the nigga had a little paper or whatever. So I kind of was like – trying to figure out what my next move gonna be as far as like what I am gonna do, because I was already doing what I was doing, you know what I'm saying? So like I said, Bill Street and the whole Memphis movement was like, that was my whole hype that drew me in, because when I first
she used to be love Friday night hitting the town, boy.
And
nothing like
and
it in the
like,
world,
you know,
boy,
ain't nothing. And that's what I used to tell people, like, yo, you know, a motherfucker can't tell me about music, because Memphis is a show you what music is. They ain't going to tell you shit. And, you know, like, you be at the light, and motherfuckers jump out their cars, because they was crazy, but, you know, they own their cars.
Hey, remember when they bouncing the whips with the gas and brakes?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think they got hydraulics when they ride, and they just hitting gas and
yeah,
brakes.
Yeah, the way them niggas, yeah.
Flicking, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, kicking. Flicking and ticking. God damn it, don't flick and tick up on my shit. Because like we was in escape, we was in Crystal Palace one time. I just got the Chevy, so I'm trying to show off. So we get up, we four deep in that bitch, but check it though. We in the Chevy, we got two Tech Nines in the back seat sitting on lap.
Mm.
Got the AK and I got the two Rugers. And I put yeah, we ride, but the whole Memphis ride dirty. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I'm like, yo, and that wasn't shit, because now they in the parking lot. I'm trying to tell these motherfuckers, do not do that shit all by my car. I ain't doing the flicking and ticking. I ain't doing that shit.
Right.
So some nigga get, this nigga get so close to my shit, he damn near can just stick his hand out. He ain't even got to stick too far and could grab my blunt out my hand. So I'm telling dude, like, yo, you and your little clique, y'all need to, yo, if you hit my car. So now we pull
out. I'm fucking you up, right, yeah.
Man, we thought we raised some shit up and let niggas know, man, look, all right, now keep on, nigga. There's going to be a shootout.
Right.
Man, them niggas pulled out AKs and all kind of shit with bandanas on them. I'm like,
yep,
what
you
the
know what I'm saying?
Fuck?
Hey, look, And motherfuckers don't know, like, you would be at Graceland and thinking it's all peaches and cream. You take a couple more motherfucking steps and
it's
Memphis.
Yeah, you right there.
Yeah, man, it's one of them cities. And motherfuckers used to get it in, man. And don't nobody even go in the Crystal Palace. We outside, goddammit. I did kind of like how they put that in the movie on the Hustle and Flow, too. You know what I'm saying?
What
like they was all out there cooling and kicking and shit.
That's why I said they was trying to steal. They was trying to catch or something. But it's supposed to have been the gangster walk. That's what that movie was supposed to be about. And I was going to lead that on. But everybody else didn't have nothing to do with the gangster walk. So they kind of like gave them the script. You know, they was putting that together as they was going. They just used the main thing was about the producer. They had that part down pat about the Memphis sound and that rap style.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to tell people, I used to be like, don't change up your rap style because somebody else going to rap that style and get paid money and you stop doing it. You know what I'm saying?
I always felt like people were stealing Memphis styles because I go other places and I hear other guys, you know what I'm saying? And
I come in the game with something a little different. I had certain rappers that I fuck with, you know what I'm saying? And Paul, I guess everybody had their choice of whoever came or whatever, but when it came to that part right there, I basically kind of like help put certain things in perspective with different people trying to, you know what I'm saying, basically just come in and do something. So when I got signed to EMI, Dino,
mm-hmm.
this guy named Dino DeValle, he was at Revitively Records. And see, him and Dave Gossett both came down to Memphis for to sign me. And I wind up going with EMI, and I didn't go with Revitively. So what Dino did, Dino came back to Memphis. He used to come, and he'd come to my house. And he was from New York, you know what I'm saying? So he used to be like, yo, this South shit is popping. SMK, I can't sign you. I need a group to sign. So I was like, yo, you know, it's these niggas down in New Orleans that got their shit together. And I was talking about Master P. And then I said, okay, there's some other ones too. And I said, these niggas know your money. And that's the next thing you know, the nigga went down there, he got them, and he said, I got them, but I don't know what to do. I said, nigga, come shoot a video with them with 3-6 Mafia, because 3-6 Mafia just signed to Revitively, and see, he was over at Revitively. And I said, now, nigga, show them that you the man. Do a video with Cash Money, because Cash Money them could push their own self. And next thing you know, there you go. Yeah, Dino, man, I played a role right there with that whole selective getting picked up with Dino going down to New Orleans and everything to get them. He sat at my house in South Memphis and said, I need a group. And I said, nigga, you need to go down to New Orleans. And them the only two that you might can do something with. And he wound up getting Cash Money. He's like, I got him, S. I got him.
Well, hey guys, we're about to be up. SMK, sorry to cut you off. We're about to be up out of here, man. Cut us off. But before we go, if cats want to get at you for production, for features, for shows, what's the best way to reach you?
At Street Music South, MUZIK, the music like that, @gmail.com.
And
hit me up at 704-858-4677.
No doubt.
Definitely.
Hey, and SMK, we do like some round tables too. Talking about the round tables though, Chris, because we might catch them on here with Pat or Al Capone and them. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to have a round table, like maybe have you, Zerk, Squeaky, Al, and Pat, you know, do like a Memphis round table. Can you help us put that together?
No doubt.
That's what I'm talking about.
Right, so we got everybody on deck. And I might bring a few more, matter of fact. You know what I'm saying? A few more, like Endo.
Endo
you
know G, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yo.
So, yeah, because I talked to Skinny,
man.
Too, right?
Yeah,
yep,
Skinny's been out here a few times. He was on one of the round tables with Mr. Servon, Marvelous, DJ Ready Red.
Spice
Yo, DJ Ready Red, man, the Ghetto Boys, he's on here all the time, too. That motherfucker, man, he's from Jersey. Look at the impact he had on the South. He'll say, first motherfucker to sample Scarface.
Right.
Shit's
and all
crazy.
Of my people, Scarface, I mess with all of them. I mean, all of them like family, bro.
And here is still doing it. why not fuck with these? I'm telling you, because there's so many. If you hear the new Spice One shit, if you hear the new MC8, there's so many motherfuckers out here that you think old, but they schooling you motherfuckers still
and
this
and
rap shit.
That's what I do, and that's why I'm coming out right now, because I'm just going to show them something different. But let them know that I got a new opening, you know what I'm saying, for y'all. We putting out single compilations and just finna bring the new talent, you know, raw talent back and keep it local. And every city, you ain't got to leave no more. You can make money just staying local, because it could be a fucking million-dollar business just local. And that's what everybody got to understand. You don't have to go to the next city, because they already saying what they saying there. They don't want you there. You know what I'm saying? And that's that,
right.
You know, Atlanta for Atlanta, Memphis for Memphis, Chicago for Chicago. You know, it's stars from everywhere, and that's what got to happen. The ones who make it got to hold down their own city, you know what I'm saying? But somebody got to start it to say that this is what need to be done. And I think that we are, you know, we could be the ones that start something, because this is y'all history and my history. It ain't nothing. I don't see nothing out there that could surpass. You know, everybody did what they did, but they ain't done what I done.
You know what we need to do? You know what we need to do? We need to do like a Chi-Town to Memphis album where every song is one Chicago artist and one Memphis artist working together. You know what I'm saying? We need to do some crazy
matter
shit
fact,
like that.
You keep that, and that's going to be a project that's going to come out this summer, no doubt. We can make that happen with just a flyer. know what I'm saying? Just a flyer, bro. So
definitely.
You know?
Definitely. Well, hey, thanks for coming on the show. Oh, I'm going to get off into this track, DJ Villain, North to South Connection. It's the title track. Get that album. It's got 25, 26 Memphis artists. You know what I'm saying? Thanks again for coming on the show, SMK. We played the tracks earlier. You know what I'm saying? You got some dope shit, man. You still one of the I call him one of the timeless producers, because what you made 20 years ago is still relevant today. You know what I'm saying? Timeless shit, timeless music, and you're still making it. So keep doing your thing. I appreciate you, man.
No doubt, one love.
All right, that's what it is, man. You guys tune in tomorrow, Fahrenheit Hour, First Degree D. Saturday, we got KFYB, and you know we do it on Tuesdays. You know what I'm saying? BG got Underground Classics. You know what I'm saying? Keep it growing, keep it going. Here we go.
It's the villain nation.
Trying to change the game, you know?
Infiltrate the whole damn thing. Lay back, here's the name, what you know about that?
Hell
fuck your goons and fuck your rap. Don't you know we put the realest shit out here, really living this,
you know?
Headed to the top of the pyramid, gouging the hours supply. Look, this really started drilling it. Start to hurt your feelings, kid, but this is growing for business, y'all. Ain't no room for bitching, y'all. MGS for life, man. Gotta let my nuts hang. Hell the flow, they hanging out, I ain't give a fuck. Yeah. Ain't no, it's laid back in this bitch, man. Rollin' with Young and Dumb,
Living
Dead Productions, yeah, man. Come and get you some, kid, one.
With no rex, can't stand on my two legs. Kissin' and get lit instead. I to the max, I'm wax that urban 40 ounces till I'm dead. Listen to me when I said, huh? I need that OG that kush, huh? Going to Canada, meeting up with the villain, now we good. Cut for the coke in the black, get these sacks we want for show. North to South Connection on that ass, yeah, ho. I send a pack from California. Funny some metals where it go. When it get there, it stank up the whole town with Cali drove. Yeah, sick and twist the massive current flow. Voodoo magic making classics with my eyes closed. Middle fingers when I pose for an album cover, and I always let my face show. Cause I'm about to kill them, case closed. You ain't fucking with us. We are so rebellious. Hear me let my rhymes bust. I'm busting the crime. It's just in a little cocaine
dust. It was over before we started. I don't even have to go my heart. It's North to South Connection, Canada, Memphis, dropping banger after banger. So relentless, coming at you in all directions, hollow points. Laid back with MC Mag, getting crunk off that cardiac. C-Rocks breaking down that sack, city pimps counting sacks. Little gins loading up a Mac, people busy rolling through in a lack. MC Red Eyes, where you at, man? I need you to hit up Steve Main. Up in North Memphis, making it rain.
Money.
And get up my dog Kano. Tell him bring the pain. 4-7, my white boy already on his way.
Hungry.
Young Memphis, you know I see you. Gangsta R.O.B., what it do? Need a knife when you rollin' through. I think I'll holler at you, cause we ain't cool. It's a villain nation. patient, bitch. Act like you know, damn fool.
Damn fool, damn fool.
I'm laid back, I'm LDB, I'm UCS, can't fuck with me. I'm loaded, creeping out with the feet. Stop full of dope, give a bow, man, become harder than that team you reppin'. Crossing me, fuck boy, keep stepping. Deadly over these melody bucky weapons in my possession. Smith and Wesson, I'm not stressing. Stack some bodies, steal some blessings. Toe tag, a couple of fags. This ain't shit to leave you resting. I'm out here trigger molesting, finger fucking pistols daily. Dump until it's empty or you motherfuckers faded. Hey, Jesus cannot save me, you can't fade. You patient, cutting faces, leave them nameless. Tasting blood with choppers blazing. Moving silence, leave no traces. Racing people to body snatch out. Out to wet and coming at ya. Pass my face, I'm not no actor. Real in the field with a gas to blast ya. Cold and tight, but it burn at night. Will it take fight and fuck your life? End it right when I lock these sights. Cut the lights and hush the fight. Better get right, my time is now. Cock it back and I lay you down. Putting it down for the underground. You gotta lay back when I pop these rounds.
I represent the North, but I'm not from Jersey. I hold it down for me, cause you don't have to worry. I'm keeping it sturdy. I love controversy. I'm on a journey, turning heads like a derby. You niggas is girly. You better alertly look for me like a clergy when you contracted herpes. I'm smoking this purpy, got me feeling smurfy. I'll hit you one time and leave your eye big Shirley. I rock a vibe, baby, just like a nursery. It's bigger than Albuquerque, so we leave in a hurry.